Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And hello once again, this is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. Every week at Wednesday at 12 o'clock, we will have American Tennis on the UR Tennis Network. You can call in to be a guest or to talk and ask some questions of the guests at area code 714-583-6853. The whole show today will feature one of the best coaches in throughout the South, and in the last 20 years, one of the greatest coaches in the state of North Carolina. I just want to make sure he's on the line right away before I go into the rest of my stuff. Coach Randy Pate, are you on the line?
Yes, Coach, sure am.
Great. Coach, are you on area code 912 or 704?
I'm on area code 704.
Okay, Coach, I just wanted to make sure that we had you right here and that I didn't click you off. But I do appreciate you being on the show. And before I talk about Coach Pate and some of his accolades, I wanted to remind you that the mission of American Tennis is for you to stand up and to speak out, address issues that you want to talk about, those things that you think are great about American Tennis, and those things that you do not believe are going so well. And we're talking about junior tennis, pro tennis, college tennis. Every week we have someone different on the line. Recently, we've been talking about Small Town Tennis USA and those player development programs in towns around the United States that do a great job in bringing up players and basically making them in the USA. We remind you that all that it takes, Edmund Burke said that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. You have a duty to stand up and to speak out. And I'll talk with Coach Randy about this in a few minutes, but I don't know why it is. In tennis, we operate completely in cliches and facts and on the surface so much. And most of the time, until a person starts winning a lot or coaching a lot of people who are winning, you feel like you can't speak out. But that's not the case. We need your ideas. We need them on the UR Tennis Network so we can do a good job at making tennis better in the United States. But go also to chuckcreasy.net. That's K-R-I-E-S-E.net. You can get every show over the past 2 years on the UR Tennis Network. Also, I've got all my Total Tennis Training camps listed and up for the summer as well. And I want to make sure that you get the important emails there. Coach Pate, I think you're randypate.com. Is that correct? What's your email, Coach, or your website, first of all?
RandyPateTennis.com.
RandyPateTennis.com, and we're going to say that a lot today, so that if you are in the North Carolina, South Carolina area, you want to make sure that you learn a lot about this great man. So, Coach Pate, it is a pleasure to get to have you on the show. Here's the thing. You've been doing this for such a long time that it absolutely has to be a vocation for you. 20 years in the North Carolina area, and you've worked with so many kids in that area, 17 national titles, 200 North Carolina state titles. But here in 23 players that have been ranked in the top 100 for what I count. But here is the best stat that I read about you today was the fact that 25% of all North Carolina kids that play junior tennis come out of the Randy Pate programs. Could you just talk a little bit, Coach, about how you got into coaching? Were you always a tennis guy? How did you get into this? Because you certainly have a vocation to do it.
And I wanted to clarify that last one. 25% of the kids that were selected to represent North Carolina, certainly not 25% of the kids that play in the entire state. But I got into tennis actually late. I was more a basketball player. Being 5'10", I excelled at tennis a little bit more than basketball. Anyway, fell in love with the sport, played in college, got out of college, started teaching until I could find out what I really wanted to do, and then found out that this is what I wanted to do, and haven't done anything else since then.
Well, now you started teaching. Did you go into high school? Were you a high school teacher? What were you teaching, Coach?
Right out of college, believe it or not, I started the academy. I considered basketball coaching, but for the most part, in basketball, you had to be the junior high assistant, or you had to work your way up the rung. But in tennis, if you had courts, you could have your own program, and you could run it your way. I was lucky enough to have a lot of strong coaches. I came through the voluntary program, worked with J.W. Eisenhower out of Raleigh, and Coach Perham in college. And so I had a lot of really good coaching influences. I really wanted to coach one of the two sports, but I could start up higher on the rung in tennis than I could basketball.
Yeah, well, you bring up an interesting point. I can remember some weeks back, J.P. Weber on his We Coach Tennis program had Steve Bellamy on the program, and he was talking about his ability to start the Tennis Channel was based a lot on the fact that there was no central regulation or anything. Tennis is pretty much, because it's an individual sport, it's very much like being a teacher of music, a teacher of art, a golf teacher, and the things, because it's an individual sport, if you're good at what you do, you can make a living. That's what we learned, too. It's interesting hearing this, Coach, because I grew up in Indiana playing basketball, similar type of situation as you did. And your great influence there, J.W. Eisenhower, has influenced hundreds there in North Carolina. Did you just feel starting out that this was a vocation, this was something that was special to you more than just going into high school basketball coaching or something?
Tennis, it was something that I excelled at, and more so than some of the other sports. I tried to play all the sports when I was young. And then as I got into high school, our high school coach didn't really, for our high school team, didn't have much of a background, and I ended up working with a lot of the guys on the team during practices, and anyway, just enjoyed working with people, and then in college, you know, during the summers, I would do that as well, and just really enjoyed trying to help people or teach people, and just that I don't know more than I seem to enjoy being outside trying to help somebody get better at something than I did sitting behind a desk or something of that nature. I just gravitated towards the coaching aspect, and as you mentioned, basically I started in Statesville, a real small town in North Carolina, and they'd never had a ranked player before, and just started out with kids who just wanted to just wanted to play. They fell in love with the sport, started traveling with them, taking them to tournaments, and it just kind of went from there, and just I definitely feel like I competed vicariously through the kids in our program, and still do, you know, still live and die with each loss, and, you know, after each loss, we're working harder than, you know, the getting back to the grindstone, trying to figure out how to make it better, and I just really enjoy that aspect of training, of competing, and whether you win or lose, trying to figure out how to make corrections, how to make it better. And, you know, as I've gotten long in the tooth, I'm still very motivated. I have my own children playing now as well, and I'm actually finding out it's a lot harder to watch your own kids play than other people's
How
children
old are
play.
Your children?
I have 13, 10, 8, and 5.
Wow. So they're right coming up on that competitive ages where there's going to be a lot of changes happening. And right, you're exactly right. All of us, if that's coaching your own, you've got to change gears from being a parent to a coach. And you know, I want to talk about that in a few minutes. I want to go, first of all, to talk about a little bit about Small Town Tennis USA. We're trying to start a program, Randy, with and here's the statistics, a couple things. We have two sleeping giants in USA Tennis where we're losing kids we shouldn't. 72% of all professional athletes come out of towns that are less than 50,000 or less. And I know that I was fortunate enough to meet you, and I was when I was at Clemson recruiting Kevin Fleck, and just a great human being, and small-town mentality, small-town work ethic, just salt-of-the-earth character. And these kind of kids, I think sports mean a whole lot to, maybe. And but we have 72% of all professional athletes come out of the Shelby, North Carolinas, French Lick, Indianas, or the Greenwood, Indianas, and things. Now, two things. I think we're putting a lot of our emphasis into urban instead of rural. And then the other thing is this. The other sleeping giant is high school tennis. We have 350,000 kids in high school tennis that play high school tennis, but only 26,000 or 7% of them actually play more than 5 tournaments a year. So you're doing exactly your success. I mean, would you say your success have something to do with that you're working in an arena where people care how much you care? I mean, nobody cares what you know unless they know that you care. But you care a lot about your kids, and these kids know that. And this has a direct correlation to their success, don't you think, more than just the forehands and backhands you teach?
Yes, I definitely think in the tennis development, and I'll take the first question on the rural areas. The one thing, in a rural area, I believe there's so much less distraction. The kids, they dive into something. Their parents are very involved. You know everybody. Everybody knows you. To some degree, it's easier to be successful or known in that rural area, which I think is encouraging to both the parents and the kids. And a lot of times there's less competition because one of the things in the bigger southern cities, everybody's competing against each other, stealing kids. A lot of times these kids don't come up with the same coach and the same program. You know, everybody's chasing the new place. And one of the things that we found was, you know, almost 80% of our kids that were top-ranked players, all of them took their very first lesson with us. We had time to develop them. A lot of places when these academies compete against each other, I believe it's a win-now mentality because if they don't win, the kid will leave and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So they don't necessarily develop a game that translates to college or 18, whereas in the rural areas where I think you don't have to deal with that as much, you can take your time, build the game so that it has upside, you know, not stress so much that if little Susie loses this match, they're going to run to this other place. They still might, but I think there's a lot less of that. But I definitely feel when the parents in the small town, they absolutely know who you are. You know who they are. You have time to explain your ideas as to, you know, what the development plan is. And I think there's a lot more patience. I have a lot of friends who have academies in bigger cities, and, I mean, they're looking over their shoulder all the time. You know, somebody's, oh, my gosh, you know, that kid was training with me. Are you sure your pro's doing the right thing with it? You know, I think it's a lot more cutthroat, and it's a lot more win now rather than the long-term development. In a lot of cases, certainly that's a big generalization, but I really do feel that that's one of the advantages of a rural area if you have a long-standing program that is successful.
Right, and this is really interesting. I'm hoping that a coach I've asked to call in tonight, Coach Dan Volk from South Georgia, who's, I think, doing one of the best jobs of coaching young people that I've ever seen, and he's influenced hundreds of lives. I'm hoping that he'll call in. I've got a couple calls already. I've asked the callers to just hold for the second half of the show here because we've got some stuff we've got to get through. But, Coach, Small Town Tennis USA with Coach Vonk, there's two voids. Most of the time, towns of 50,000 or under don't have a Randy Pate. You know, they usually have a, and would never, ever say a coach, anything about a coach that's coaching another sport that they maybe don't have a background in, because coaches are people we respect probably as much as anybody I know in my life. But the point is, you had a great skill set, not just in tennis, understanding tennis, but your teaching. But the accountability, here's the point that you've made, I think, that is great, is that in the small town, you can take the kids to a higher level of accountability, and parents trust you more to do the tough jobs. In other words, I told somebody today, I said, there's three kinds of coaching. You've got resort coaching where people come in and they just say, hey, your dress looks great, and would you like to buy a racket? And that forehand's coming along. And then you've got country club coaching, is a little tougher than that. You can do some, but then there's real coaching. But my point is that you're able to do real coaching, and it's mainly because parents trust you. Am I right? Am I on the right track there?
Yes, I would definitely agree with that, and I hope that continues. But I mean, that's such a big part of the whole equation is the parents. And if the three-headed monster is, does the player love the sport? Do you have a coach who can help you with direction? And are the parents willing to support and trust the coach? And hopefully along the way, everybody works on the values of making it a good person as well as a good player. And when you can find that, I mean, you can have special situations, and the kids are generally, whether they end up playing tennis any further or not, the discipline, what they learn and how to handle adversity, how to have your heart broken and then hop back in and start training harder to try to change that result, you know, just when you have that opportunity to work with the family, work with the kid over years, it's real coaching in many ways, and it's very rewarding because you have lifetime relationships that have formed, and then once you get through the initial stages, it's a lot easier for you to be trusted in the future because you have families who can say, yes, you know, this
they've been
worked
with
out
you
great,
before.
You know, they, you know, our child, you know, we had great values, they, you know, they went on to play wherever.
But I feel like that's a big part of it,
the parents trusting the coach.
Well, it's the trust in what you're saying. You know, we always say, I've said it many times on this show, that there's five levels of relationships: cliches, facts, opinion, feelings, needs. Each one is a little bit deeper than the other. And when you come from a small town and they trust you and everybody's accountable to each other, I think that that's a huge thing. You can do cliches, facts. You go to opinions, but you also go to feelings and needs, which are much more. So in Small Town Tennis USA, I hope Coach Vonk gets on and talks about it. But what we're also trying to do is to fill another void. Another void is we have hundreds of college kids out there like yourself, like myself. I went to Tennessee Tech, and I played a little basketball. It's starting out my career and stuff, but I wanted to be a teacher. And like that, there's lots of kids who want to stay in tennis who aren't going to play pro tennis. So what we're trying to do with Coach Vonk is to hook up some down-the-line college kids with some towns and their community centers and high schools in the summertime. And we've got a pilot program going this summer, Coach, and we'll see how it pans out. We've got a couple different places. But I got a question to ask you here. Did you play tennis at first because you wanted to win or because you fell in love with the sport? This is important for me to ask you this.
Well, I don't know that I'll directly answer this. I grew up in a neighborhood that ended up having seven Division I basketball players, and I was the youngest kid of that big group. So basically everything we did, I got my brains beat out. But on the tennis court, you know, because we'd go from one sport to the next, that was the one thing that I could beat everybody at. And so, I think I loved it. I want to say I loved it, but I also know that was my one shot that I could shine in the neighborhood group. So I think to some degree that helped me push me in that direction as well.
Would you say that your dislike or hating of losing was a great deal of your motivation?
Yes, I think I grew up, luckily I had good coaches who could help me, you know, turn that motivation into positive direction, because
right.
I certainly
sure.
had a temper. I certainly wanted to win real bad. I certainly can look back on many childish moments. My wife would probably say I still have them, but
we all do.
Basically,
you're a competitor, Coach.
But basically, I definitely feel I grew up just in a very competitive neighborhood. We competed with about every single thing you could ever imagine, who could throw a rock farther or, you know, whatever it was. So I think kind of within the environment I grew up in, it was just everybody competed
right.
at everything.
Right.
And you hated losing.
Well, of course,
really
my reason for asking this is we all know that if you love winning and hate losing, you're going to be pretty darn good. I am very, very concerned about the participation trophy mentality that we have now, where the kids get pats on the back for whatever they do. And there's several things. The point system where the kids are going out and chasing points instead of rivalries, that where they maybe dislike losing to people and that spurs them on, or playing for titles. I think this is a very motivational thing. You've got to enjoy winning and you've got to dislike losing a lot. Now, the point being is that I think that we're doing some of these things wrong and with the participation trophies and where we even have situations where the kids don't have keep really score of how many matches they win or not. But, you know, the falling in love with the sport, I think, comes first for some people. And but then I say, always say that I played tennis because of the three drugs I got, Coach: dopamine, adrenaline, and endorphins. You know, the dopamine
right.
from making ball contact, the adrenaline from competing, and endorphins from the daggone training of the thing. But listen, I want to take a call here, and because I'm going to get a question in before we take a break and see if we
I would like to come back to that as well and address that, because
okay.
I do have some strong opinions on exactly what you just said.
Okay, go ahead, Coach. We'll let you go. Go ahead,
okay. Well, basically, I think the USTA has done something right. They started this year. In the past, if you could get to a certain level of tournament, they would give this huge amount of points if you just got one win and a 64 draw. So we had these nationally ranked players who would play 2 or 3 years and not win a tournament, just because they were rewarded if they could get into these tournaments just with a – even a default would give you more points than winning in a power level below. And this year, finally, and it's frustrating to some people because they keep switching the system, but hopefully there'll be some continuity with the system. They've taken out a ton of the points in the early rounds. You only get big points if you're making the semifinals or in.
Okay.
Or you're winning
That's
the
smart.
Back draw at a big tournament. And, you know, now everybody's having to play down levels than they used to because they're having to win tournaments to get their points. So I think now we're actually teaching kids the importance of having to win, to play the level you can win, to face lesser, you know, face the possibility of a disappointing loss. Because I really feel like a lot of what you were saying, and I agree with that, is we're protecting the kids' feelings, we're protecting their emotions, they're trying to avoid bad losses, they're chasing points by going to, you know, the softest possible way to earn this, and I completely agree. We've got to teach kids to get out and win tournaments. Whatever that level is, do not try to go to the next level unless you can win at another level a certain amount of times. And I feel like we're finally, that we have a system that's making our parents and coaches put kids in situations where they are uncomfortable. Because we have so many parents and kids and other coaches as well who try to avoid the difficult situation rather than try to learn from the difficult loss. You know, and I really feel like getting these kids out there, making them, you know, getting their heart broken, when, you know, having them care that they lose and wanting to do something about it is such a big part of their development and their ability to overcome adversity, to handle pressure at higher levels. And I feel like we're finally starting to have a system that hopefully will yield rewards in the future, because that was just a big frustration, is just seeing this giant level of talented kids who would have losing records or 500 records for the year, would go a whole year without winning a tournament, and feeling like this was, you know, a really good development plan. And I know I've talked with you in the past about, you know, I've had dinner with, I was lucky enough to have dinner with Jose Aguirre as well, and hear his philosophy on it, and I just really feel like you have to put a certain amount of emphasis of facing the pressure of being the top seed, taking it to the house, learning how to accomplish that, and, you know, there is definitely big amount of junior tennis who absolutely love to go into the level above them where there's no pressure if they lose, and, oh, well, we were playing up, or, oh, you know, we did this. And I really feel like that's been holding us back.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Coach.
Coach, that's so well said, Randy. That is so well said. Today I was talking to someone, And I have said this for years, that players only win to the level they cannot stand losing down to. And if they're okay with losing, they'll lose. They usually learn how to win when they have to win. There's such a fine, it's the game is only part of it, right, Randy? It's yep. Basically their competitiveness. And when they dislike losing enough, they learn how to win. And it's that simple. And it's a hard thing to learn for kids to start to carry leads. And most of the times when they make a commitment and start working really, really hard, they'll play tight and they'll play poorly for a month or two and then until they start getting used to it. But here's the point, and I bring this up because earlier in what you were saying, you said you talked about the kids having heartbreak and what they would do next and how parents trusted you to do the tough things. Instead of babying them, you would put them back on the court or you would make them get right back up on the horse. Am I right?
Exactly. You identify, I mean, basically you want to play, if this, once again, my philosophy, and you can tell me if you agree, but I also want them to play a certain amount of tournaments where they get exposed. And sometimes, you know, the kids are different. Sometimes you get exposed because you can't finish the match that you should finish. It can be a nerves problem. It could be a technique deficiency. You play at a higher level, and somebody, you know, you have a weak backhand, they powerful serve, they serve your backhand, you know, they expose that. But to some degree, you've got to find these deficiencies, whether they be emotional, technique, you know, strategy, whatever it is, and, you know, you've got to make that better because there's always going to be another level, and if you don't address the things that will bring you down, you know, you're going to get brought down continually for the same thing. So for the most part, you know, when I talk to the parents and the players, importantly, when we do our goal setting, we want to know, you know, what is your biggest weakness? What is your biggest fear? You know, and we try to make a plan to overcome it. It might have brought you down this tournament, but you know what? It's not going to bring you down next tournament, and we're going to focus on it. You know, and that's one of the coaching. You know, we coach from the other side as well. You know, what's your biggest strength, and how do you plan to set that up? You know, what's your game plan to get that as many times as you can? You work both sides of it, but I mean, if you hide from your deficiencies and you ignore them, or you don't put yourself in a position where they're going to be exposed, at some point it catches up to you. And the later it catches up to you, the less time you have to do something about it. And certainly, you know, being a college coach, you know, if we give you a player with a lot of deficiencies, you know, they're not going to fare too well at your level. They're probably not going to have a chance to play at your level in the first place. But, you know, so we wholeheartedly dive into that aspect of it and in the training. And if we have a kid who tells me, oh, I had a bad tournament, I want to take a week off, you know, that we'll address that. But the way we'll address that is, you know, don't you really want to change what happened? And if they don't have that desire, that's okay, but they're probably going to be competitive at a lesser level. And, you know, we'll talk to them if they really want to be at a higher level. But for the most part, we want to teach kids, you know, when there's something out there that is just right in front of your eyes and it's got to get better, what are you going to do to get better about it? And the sooner, you know, you're ready to dive into, you know, addressing it, the better off you're going to be. And you know, and that just happens. You know, once you address that, it's going to be something else, and then it's something else, and you know, it never stops. But you know, when you develop that mentality, you know, that the kids can they can take it pretty far, you know, if they have that mentality.
You know, what's interesting here is none of this works if parents don't really trust you. If you have to do cliches and facts and country club, or I'm not cutting on country clubs, but resort type coaching here, where you're just working with strokes and not with the inside of the person, the heart, you're not going to go anywhere. And because here's what you're doing tough love coaching. Now, I'd like for you to address real quickly just the up or down on these. I may be loading the table here, but I'm so upset that we do these 10-point tiebreakers for the third set. Because in my mind, when kids win them, it's sort of like, well, you know, you didn't really get the rite of passage. Like when rites of passage, when kids move up different levels, Coach Pate, what happens usually it's 7-5 in the third, it's 7-6 in the third, you barely squeak by, and then you get going in the tournament. There is a momentum to the tournament. When we do this, we're crippling our kids.
Coach, I can just tell you, from a standpoint, you know, I've been doing this 28 years, and the fitness level of our players, you can't imagine what it's done to us. We do not have to be
fit. I can imagine.
You will see high level players with bellies and they're teenagers, and they're able to succeed because we have more of a gunslinger mentality. If we get a 10-point breaker, you know, whoever and you look at
That's
who we've
right.
developed, you know, Isner and Roddick.
Well,
you know, we've got the big servers, the guys who can go for it.
That's right.
At our junior level, we are not, you know, for instance, at pro level, you have to concentrate on one match from beginning to end. If it's a competitive, you know, equal talent match, you know, it is a battle for 3.5 hours or 3 hours or two, whatever it is.
And
your fitness level and concentration level is such. And right now, you don't have to have that. We are not preparing them for that.
Coach, we're preaching to the choir with a lot of coaches out there. The administrators don't see this, I guess. They're listening to the sports science people too much, and they're thinking it's too strenuous. I keep telling these sports science people, my daughter swims, and she's 10 years old, and she swims 28 laps just to warm up. So, I mean, come on, give me a break. And there's no way they go to this high level of confidence and concentration and toughness by playing these things. But here's the bigger point, the rite of passage of winning those tough, long matches. All confidence, all learning happens in the third set. I tell administrators, if you're going to do the 10-point tiebreaker, play it the first set. That way all deciding sets would be full sets. We do the same thing with A-game pro. We do the same thing with A-game pro sets, Coach. A-game pro sets, when the kids win them, well, you want a pro set. If you lose them, well, it didn't really hurt that bad. My point is, the Kalamazoo 51 defaults in the back draw where it's a point system, and it's not a big penalty to lose, and they were playing 10-point tiebreakers. We've got a couple callers, but I've got to go to a commercial right real quick while I can, Coach. We've got Coach Randy Pate on today, folks, and we want you to hang on. We'll be right back. This is Chuck Creasy with American Tennis. And this is Chuck Creasy. And in 2014, we will have 5 camps, total tennis training camps in South Carolina and Atlanta. Look at totaltennistraining.com or chuckcreasy.net. This is our 38th summer of doing total tennis training camps. We emphasize the physical, the mental, and the emotional parts of the game. Also, with the advanced players, we will be teaching the advanced players the 8 tools that they will need to control momentum on the tennis court. Everybody talks about momentum, but it's not taught anywhere except total tennis training camps and the total tennis training method. Go to chuckcreasy.net and look at our summer camps, and we will see you this summer. Thank you.
fuel, it isn't ours. And we're in cotton, we didn't grow. He's got the red, white, blue, flying high on a farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag. In the back it says USA. He won't buy nothing and he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prisoner.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy with Coach Randy Pate, one of the greatest coaches in the history of North Carolina tennis. Of course, J.W. Eisenhower and so many others there in the state as well. North Carolina has a great history of tennis. Coach, we've got a caller. I'm going to bring him on the line here, and then we can go from there. Caller, air code 912. Are you on the line? 674?
Hey, Chuck, this is Dan Vaughn. Great, I was hoping you would call in.
Yes, you're great. I was hoping you would call in, Coach Vaughn, because you, I was bragging on you earlier about doing such a great job down there in South Georgia. So we have Randy Pate on the line that pretty much has done what you are doing, you know, for so many years. What did you have to say, and what would you like to ask today?
Well, Chuck, you know, what I wanted to comment on, I know you're talking about small-town tennis and developing tennis in rural areas. I know that's one of your passions and everything, and we're trying to get the small-town tennis internship thing going. I'll tell you, I love coaching high school kids. I know that you're passionate about them. I love their parents. I just, you know, I love teaching in a rural area. I liked a lot of what Randy had to say. The thing I'm really missing, to be honest with you, is I think I need a Randy Pate who does it full-time in my rural area. That's one of the biggest difficulties that I have, and it's one of the things that we're trying to overcome and help with the small-town tennis and the internship program. But, you know, one of the problems that I have as a high school coach is that, one, me and my staff have full-time jobs, and so tennis is after our full-time job, and there's only so much time in the day, no matter how passionate we are and how much we want to do to help our kids develop as tennis players. But we have other jobs, and so our time is limited in terms of taking kids to tournaments and exposing them to higher-level tennis and everything else. And we need parents. You know, we talked about the importance of parents buying in and trusting the coach, but I need my parents to also take the kids to the tournaments and do everything else. And what I'm saying, you know, when I say what we need is a person like a Randy Pate, it sounds like Randy does it full-time, and which I think is wonderful in a small town or in a rural area, but you need that guy. I want that guy that will take kids places on tournaments when parents can't, that will organize an individual goal thing that does tennis as their full-time job and as their passion and can pass that on to their kids. And, you know, what can we do in rural areas when we don't have that full-time guy that organizes that and takes kids to tournaments?
Well, I think, Coach, a good question to ask Randy. Yeah, Randy, why did you go to Statesville? And go ahead and answer that question.
I'll answer that question first. Basically, one of the keys, because we've set up programs in other small cities, and we've been successful. And you're right, you have to have a full-time person. But basically, one of the things, being that you're a high school coach, you have courts, and maybe getting someone out of college, letting them, you know, getting the high school to let them use the courts to start developing a program. A lot of times we traditionally did it with the Parks and Rec, but if you set it up so that this person has the sole rights to teach at your facility, obviously if you're the head coach, you want a junior development program as part of this. It does take a couple of years, but a lot of the – if you have a younger guy who's willing to take a chance, at least in North Carolina, I can speak to it, there are a lot of guys who've been able to make a living at a small town, starting out on just basic courts, getting people interested, especially having someone that's like a high school coach in the community who would direct kids to this program. That's in general how it can work. Unless you have something established, you're probably not going to be able to bring in someone who has a good track record. But there's so many kids coming out of college who still love the game, who would love to coach, and you know, a lot of times they will take an assistant's job at a country club, and as Chuck said, you know, get into the resort tennis aspect of it. But if you find a guy, you know, find a young kid who's motivated, wants to work with kids, is willing to take a chance on themselves, because if they do well, then they're rewarded financially. You know, it takes them a little while to get going, but I feel like there's a lot of kids out there who would like that opportunity, and they might be a former player of yours who has just gotten out of college and, you know, needs a job, you know, or somebody that you feel like has the personality to do well in that regard. Because I see these guys all the time. I've had a number of them who've worked for me, and if given the opportunity, they'll do a good job. Most of them, especially if they played in college, most of them have a pretty good background. They understand higher levels of tennis. Just obviously it's finding the person that is motivated to make people better and to travel and to, you know, the parents can sniff out if somebody's disinterested or if they genuinely want to help their child. And I think as a high school coach, you would probably be able to know that personality as well. If the school system would let you use the courts, you could directly set it up right there on campus.
Randy, let me ask you real quick this, Chuck, real quick. Why did you go to a smaller town starting out? Were you from Statesville or?
I played basketball and tennis in college. I got out of college. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. As I said, I wanted to go into coaching. But the only place that I was offered to start as a head tennis pro was in Statesville. I was young and thought way too much of myself, and I wanted to be my own boss, and they were the only one willing to make me that.
Okay, you hit the selling point, Coach Wonk. He hit the selling point that I'm trying to sell, and you're trying to sell also with Small Town Tennis USA, is that we can get a college kid in to some counties, and they're the number one guy, and they're the number one. They learn all of those responsibilities, and there's a time to be a number two for learning, but that's very, very telling what Randy just said. Coach Falk, anything else?
Well, I think you're right. I think that is the key. I need that guy who wants to come in and is self-motivated and self-directed and wants to be that guy and is willing to grow the program. That's exactly what we need, somebody who does it full-time and takes ownership of it and takes off, you know. And, that is what we've been talking about with small-town tennis, even though right now as an internship we're looking for a college guy that comes down for, you know, a good part of the summer. But that's what the kids in the rural towns need, is that full-time person who does it, that will take them to high-level competitions and expose them to that high-level training and everything. So hopefully we're on to something good with the small-town tennis, and that will help to develop our areas.
Coach,
yeah,
Randy.
Sounds like a great start.
Coach Randy, I do. We've got about 10 minutes. I wanted to just talk very quickly about the progression. Your thoughts about the progression from 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 14-year-old, 16-year-old, 18-year-old, what you're looking for, what levels the kids have to hit before you're satisfied. Just a short synopsis here in a couple minutes.
Well, basically, in our philosophy anyway, we try to find, we don't really have a certain system that we work under. We work more to... We try to find what makes the player special, what they can do that separates them from most of the players, and then find a game plan that they can build towards to where, well, basically when they're 18, that a coach like yourself, okay, it would translate at your level.
Okay, even
and,
a
and
10
that,
or 11, what age do you try to look at this distinctive quality, whether it's speed, a forehand, a serve, tenacity, willingness to attack, whatever, when do you start looking for that? When, what age?
When they have a basic grasp of the basics, you know, you want to give them a solid base, and just depending on how early they started tennis is when they develop that solid base. But once they have a solid base, a good foundation, okay, now what makes you special? How can, you know, when there's six courts out there, what can you do that people would go, wow, that kid does that really well, and how can we develop a game around that? And but first, I feel like you gotta have the basics in place before you start doing that. Sometimes it's at a very early age, sometimes it is at a later age. Many factors, you know, as to when that happens.
So age related, not age determined, and I love that because
what you're saying is that the youngster starts at 14, you might be doing the fundamentals, and then by the time they're 15, 16, you're trying to see what makes them definitive. But that's the same lesson plan as a 10-year-old maybe, if they are just a little bit earlier starting. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. I mean, we have some kids who have started, you know, at a very early age, and, yes, at 10 or 11, they're already excelling even at the 14 and under level with game plans, with weapons, and, you know, we're taking balls out of the, you know, they're doing very advanced skills. And we have other kids who, you know, 15 or 16, they're still trying to find that weapon because they started later in the game.
Right.
They might only play once or twice a week, and, you know, they haven't hit enough balls and had enough instruction to be at that level yet.
And here's what I love what you're saying, and again, it goes back to trust of the parents. They've got to know that you've got a plan for their youngster and that it's a piece-by-piece. It's not a microwave deal. It's like cooking stew on the back burner. You add the ingredients when it's the right timing to do so. Randy, we had in 1985, 84, we had 39 USA-born players go to college and be in the top 100 in the world. We had 41 out of 100. 39 went to college. Today, we only had John Isner for about two or three years, one. And now we have the Klon guy from, I think, Stanford, and Stephen Johnson have broken in there. But what it's really has been pathetic, college, we have lost so much talent fall through the cracks in college now. And then, of course, our kids are too immature maybe to just go out and play pro tennis. Some of them do, the Dennis Kudelas, the Jack Sox. But tell me, if you were in charge, you were the decision maker for our country. And again, these are good people doing the best they can. But college, we have a problem in college with not enough competition, not enough work done. And we're really trying to get into the entertainment business, to the education business maybe as far as players.
Right.
Give me the quick answer there in the next 4 or 5 minutes, Coach, what you see.
Well, basically, my opinion on the college tennis, and we've seen this with a lot of players, they don't develop at the same rate that they were developing in juniors. In juniors, they're competing year-round, and, I mean, you're constantly sharp. And in the college season, it's a very condensed, it's very intense, it's very talented. But one of the things, you know, and obviously this would be up to the NCAA, but if we really wanted our players to have the opportunity, you know, I think they should be allowed to possibly play professional tournaments while they're in college without loss of matches or without all the restrictions that they have. You know, I know a lot of the coaches now will have them in a couple of tournaments, but then they sacrifice them a couple of matches. But in general, I think it has to get more towards a year-round competing at the college, you know, our talented college players, and to some degree, I know some do, but I just don't think it's as broad based as it could be. And so I agree with you. So many fall through the cracks. I just feel that whereas like Jack Sock is competing year round, training year round, the same kid that goes to Stanford or Duke or Carolina or Georgia, wherever, has training restrictions. They can only train a certain amount of hours. They can only play a certain amount of matches.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
And I feel like, you know, for a kid to choose at 17 or 18, do I try pro tennis, but then I lose my eligibility, my chance for a great education at a great school, or do I take this and give up the opportunity for pro tennis? You know, I'm a parent, so, and actually we had a girl who is playing at Stanford this year as a freshman and played in a pro tournament, actually beat a girl top 200 in the world her first tournament, but it was like, okay, do you give up the Stanford education or do you, you know, do you try this? And for the parents, it's a no-brainer. They're going to Stanford,
no-brainer.
They're taking the sure shot,
and
right. Hopefully she will have an opportunity going there, but with the restricted hours, the restrictive match play, it's stacked against her versus the girl who goes the other route. Now, of course, 10 years from now, who's making more money? You know, I'll bet on Stanford education. That's one of the disconnects.
One of the cripplers, though, right now is the collegiate format, and we've talked week after week about this, but dual match format does not develop players. It gives you reps, but it gives you reps at the same level over and over and over and over again. It's like repeating fifth grade math over and over and over and over again. In tournament tennis, Coach, I really believe you have players below you, even with you and above you, as you advance through the tournament. And in one weekend, a player can exponentially grow. And it takes a whole season of doing everything almost perfect to advance a little bit. I heard J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis program earlier today. Dennis Emery was saying his number one player was top five in the country. His second player was top 20 in the country. And the second player was thinking, I don't have any chance for pro tennis. And it's just ludicrous that we have this. So, you know, the format is a big, big thing. We only got about a minute, Coach. Any quick thing, any other quick thoughts there? Just give us a couple things to hang on to that you think are your bread and butter.
Well, I would say the big thing that I've preached with North Carolina tennis, with Southern tennis, and to the gentleman I spoke with tonight, is the reason I feel like urban tennis is not doing as well is they cast the broad net. They don't teach proficiency. Find programs that allow proficiency. Kids stick with the sport. Kids love to be good. But find, and that's why I think the rural programs work, because they're in programs that they're in there longer. And in this urban development, they have these one day where they teach 300 kids one day, and there's virtually no chance that any of the kids become proficient from that. You've got to have programs in place of proficiency if we want to make it a better sport in America.
That's right.
And we want to do better. And I feel like most of our development is just exposure rather than proficiency.
Yeah. Coach, we got to get going here in a second, but the biggest thing I hear you saying over and over and over is the parents trust you in Small Town Tennis USA. Coach Randy Pate is trusted all over North Carolina, but the trust comes in the smaller community when there is more. Nobody cares what you know unless they know that you care. And Coach, thank you.
Made in America.